The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, all right, all right, gang. It is that time of the week. It is time for the True Wealth Radio Show on this, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week. Hey, Matt.
Yes.
Thanks for joining me, as always. Mm-hmm. We are off to the races today on what I can only describe as a disappointing day in the markets.
Oh, come on. A lot of the defensive stocks were up today. Like, I think Procter & Gamble had a good day. I think silver had a good day.
Yeah, silver's not a stock. Let's not even pretend that.
Okay.
I'll totally throw
rocks
at that.
There's a couple things that did all right. Here and
okay. There. Like, you know what? I love it because Matt is such a glasses half full guy. It's the best. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a tough day in the markets. And I can't even point to exactly what it is other than, well, hey, we might have trade war 2.0.
Yeah.
Try this again.
We saw that back in March.
Yeah. You know what we really want? Greenland. You know what we're going to do? Jawbone about tariffs some more. And you know what the market's going to do?
Blech.
Try to guess and get nervous.
Japan didn't help us out much either today.
Japan bond yields? What?
Yeah.
Bond yields? Who wants to buy Japanese bonds? Evidently not as many people as yesterday.
Well, yeah. So those yields are going up, trying to entice people to lock in some 30 and 40 year notes.
Yeah. And all that suggests is, hey, guess what? Inflation's headed to Japan.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So, all right. Well, get your trip, get your visit in now if you're going to go. Because it's going to get more expensive.
Or maybe just wait and let their currency, you know, kind of have like a moment. And maybe it's like more affordable somehow because the dollar stays strong. In comparison. You know what I mean?
Like, no.
Yeah,
I don't know what you mean.
I'm saying if their currency, like if inflation kind of keeps hammering Japan and their currency weakens because inflation can cause your currency to wane.
Perhaps.
So I'm like,
perhaps
maybe your dollar is stronger in the future because...
Yeah, I guess if their inflation is going to be higher than ours, that could be the case.
Exactly, yes.
So, all right. Well,
to be honest, though, there's not a lot I want to do in Japan.
Oh, you know what? I want to go visit Japan.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do. Hmm. I want to go skiing in Japan.
Is the snow there better?
Well, I think there's snow, for one thing.
Oh, yeah. We are lacking in that this year.
But it's... No, my understanding is that it's not terribly crowded. It's fairly reasonable. I have friends, and the report is that... So some people... I have friends who have friends, right? So they're not... This is now hearsay. But essentially, they live in Hawaii. They like to ski. They say it's about equidistant, come back to the States or fly to Japan. And it is more reasonable for them to go to Japan for a ski vacation.
Really?
Yep.
So costs are a little bit better over there?
I think they're materially better over there right now.
Interesting.
And if the U.S. dollar is getting even stronger, then that is an interesting sign right there.
I really like to snowboard when you've had a ton of snow. Everything's really soft. So when I fall, it's not bad, right? Like a good 6 to 8 inches of powder. Cushion the fall.
Right.
But you know what I really don't like is when they groom the slopes and it's that hard pack. And then you got people on skis that like to fly past you at like 60 miles an hour. And you're like, wow, you missed me by like 2 feet. You almost killed me.
Because corduroy's so fast.
Yeah.
And all the skiers are thinking, stupid snowboarders, why are you always in the way?
I know. Yep.
Yep. It is a thing. What can I say? Well, how does this reflect on our money today? Well, you know, I guess the first one we can all sigh a little bit. Although I had this moment of thinking about, you know, last time that we had like a rough market. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Last time we had a pullback last year, right? I think March of last year was a pretty good pullback. And then we saw a pullback in certain stocks in like October of 25. But the last really good gut check was probably 2022. That was a rough year.
Yeah.
You know, we had come off of all of that money printing post-COVID. Markets had really ballooned up, and then we had this aggressive pullback.
Yeah, for like 12 months. It was just constant.
Yeah, it was just a grind.
Yeah.
It was just a grind. And I don't know that that's what's going to go on right now. That's not actually what I'm suggesting, but I would suggest, how many of you wish that you could roll back to the prices of 2022 and buy a lot of investments?
Yeah. I think a lot of people are probably in that boat.
And I would remind everybody that as these prices roll back right now, this is a chance to really separate quality from flash.
Mm.
So the companies that are good companies. So there's a question that I sometimes like to ask, and is this a broken company or a broken stock?
Or just a broken market, right? Because like in 2022, we saw, you know, a lot of companies going lower, right? Like, it didn't matter if you were Apple or Microsoft or whoever, like what your name was. Most of those big tech companies were seeing, you know, 20% losses. And so if you really believed in a company like what you're saying, where it's like, well, I really believe in XYZ company, and they just kind of got caught up in the downturn of a market, that might be an attractive entry point.
Well, this is an opportunity to remind yourself what an investor looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are oftentimes sort of coaxed by the market into more of a trader's mentality. We start looking at things, and let's be honest, right? The media throws a lot of information our direction, and it comes at you at a rapid pace, all kinds of news, all kinds of excitement, all kind of hype. And it's, in some respects, it's no different than sporting event, especially toward the end of the game. There's all of the flash and the glitz and the glamour. And before you know it, you're in it and you're excited and you're standing and you're hooting and you're hollering. Well, that is sort of how the market can coax you into short-term thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is it moves us or nudges us more and more into the emotional side of the decision spectrum rather than the logical side of the decision spectrum. And I like to say traders, to me, now if the traders out there, would this would really bother them, but I think a lot of folks, what this is still relevant is there's more emotion in trading. There's more sort of long-term strategy in investing.
Mm-hmm.
Most people I know are investors, not traders. Now, to be fair, there are a lot of strategies in trading that are not emotionally driven. There's a lot of quantitative stuff in the short-term space too, but it is really hard to eke out an advantage in that space. The long-term investor, I believe, has an easier pathway to success by being patient and allowing the markets to organically do what they do.
Yeah.
But that's also why when we say, is it a broken company or broken stock or broken market? I think you correctly pointed out, Maya, there are times when the market itself is broken. Everything's upset. It's all down. What's a good indicator of that environment? What's a good indicator that the market's broken?
I think one of the things like internally that we use to watch that is like the VIX, right? And mm-hmm. I could kind of explain that to our listeners for a second. So basically, it's a measure of volatility inside of the overall market, right? And volatility just means like, I mean, it's not just fear, right? But like how much like swing and shift is there?
It's actually measuring, I believe, call options on the S&P. So it's taking a look at the options marketplace and getting a sense of the differential between those that are buying calls and puts. There's something to that effect anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is derived from the options marketplace, which is really the way folks are hedging the market. So the VIX, or the volatility index, is this, it's looking at the way people are hedging to decide how much fear is in the marketplace.
Right, because if a bunch of people are getting out of the market really rapidly, then you're going to see that.
Right, and as the price of the VIX goes up, we would say, well, there's more volatility in the marketplace.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting one. Here's another one that is maybe less often thought of, but I think it really does suggest when the whole market's broken. When you start to see correlation across assets that are normally not very correlated increase. So typically, stocks and bonds are not that closely tied to each other. The markets kind of move independent of each other. When they all start moving together and in the same direction, that's a bad sign, because it suggests that in general, there's just the buyers and the sellers in the marketplace, that sentiment has shifted and biased one direction. And so it's headed down. There's more sellers than buyers, and that drives the price down.
Yeah.
This also, if you've listened to our show long enough, Matt, we still haven't made the T-shirt. You ready? You remember this one?
The
lemming scrum.
Yo, yeah. People just running off a cliff one after another following
each
other.
That's the issue. Yeah. When you see correlation start to really increase, sometimes that correlation is not rational.
Right.
But that's an indication that the market's broken.
Yeah. I mean, fear does a lot inside of the market. And I think it's kind of underestimated or maybe not understood quite enough because, you know, sometimes when a market's having a rough patch, everyone's like, oh, you know, the sky is falling and it must be because of, you know, a president or the economy. And it's like, well, no, what if it's just a lot of people think to sell?
That's ultimately all it is.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do is match the data to the behavior. We're saying, hey, look at all these people that are selling. Okay, well, what's the behavior that explains it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not the behavior. What's the data that suggests why the behavior is occurring, though? Right.
We're
trying to link events or causation to that and sort of reverse engineering a story and data fitting to the outcome that we notice.
And see, I think a lot of people don't do that. They're just like, well, it's because of blah, blah, blah. And you're like, no, not at all. Like, you're so far off base here. You're just picking the thing that you want to be mad at and blaming that thing.
So, funny but true story. This is a ways back, like all the way back into the Ben Bernanke era, which is two Fed chairs ago, right? Not
okay.
Jerome Powell, not Janet Yellen, all the way back to Ben Bernanke. There was a period of time where bad news was viewed as good by the market. As long as the market's got lousy economic data, then the markets would go higher. And you think to yourself, I'm sorry, what? And yeah, that's what was going on. Well, the reason, supposedly, this is what we use to explain it. It's like, well, why would bad news be good? Because it kept the Federal Reserve stuck in the environment where they had to provide quantitative easing. And so the Fed was more predictable, therefore bad news was good. Now, that doesn't really make sense, but it kind of made sense in those moments. But did it make sense, or did we just all agree that this was whatever nonsense we were listening to?
So people were basically like, bad news.
We drank the Kool-Aid, right?
More easing. And it's like, well, if we're getting more easing, money's still really available and cheap. And then people go buy the market.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's essentially what was going on. And in hindsight, that's probably one of the best explanations that we can conjure. Is it really the explanation? I don't know.
And
I don't know that
you
can know.
Do we ever really know?
No,
yeah.
We don't. That's the funny part about it. I think that's also why this temptation for people to want to predict the future or just sort of insist that they're correct. Okay, the only way you're going to know, you can claim that you were correct, but were you actually correct or were you just lucky that it happened as you explained it? That may not have been really what caused it, but your explanation didn't misalign enough that it looks obviously false.
Well, if I was the one that said it and it came true,
then it was
surely me.
It was real.
It was surely me.
Well, remember, if you close your eyes, I disappear. When you go home, everything else that you don't see doesn't exist anymore.
That's right.
Right? Object permanence is not the case. So that's for all of us, right? Like, hey, as soon as you turn the radio off, Dave and Matt are gone. What do you mean?
Yeah.
All right, shenanigans. Look, let's take a break. We got to get back to being disciplined here. So we will do that. When we come back, we got a couple more things to, you know, wiggle our way through here. But we got this first one. So we got to talk about broken stocks versus broken companies, too. But
and
stick
broken
around.
Dreams.
Yep.
Okay.
So we'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn with,
I don't know, some guy you pulled off the street.
Yes.
Said, come in here, do
anybody
a radio
can
show
do this
me.
Show.
Yes.
Just Matt will prove it.
Yes.
All right. Remember, you can get caught up on the podcast. The quiz that we were asking during the break.
Yeah.
So you guys can talk amongst yourselves. In fact, you're welcome to send us your vote to, you can text it to us. Text your vote to 541-375-0898.
Mm-hmm.
The options are, would you rather have an Airbnb, VRBO, which to me seems like the same thing, but Airbnb, VRBO, or
a cruise.
A cruise.
Yeah.
And no other details than that. Right? Nope. Just like, this is what it is. And so we're just going to, we're polling the audience.
Yeah.
So there you go. Go ahead and text it that. Again, the number is 541-375-0898. Let us know. Would you rather? Airbnb is one. Yep. VRBO is two. Cruise is three.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
so
are you going to share with us which one you picked?
I said cruise.
Okay. Now, why? I'm curious. You didn't get to the why yet.
You didn't give me any other details. And so
yeah.
The cruise has the... It's the most vacation-y to me because I don't have to cook or do dishes or clean up after myself or any of those other things. I unpack one time. I'm on the boat. I get the entertainment of the boat. We go to different ports. Wherever we get to get off, I experience other stuff.
It takes some of the planning portion out of it.
It takes the planning and the logistics and simplifies it, provided that it's not complex to get there.
Have you been on a cruise before?
I have been on cruises.
Do you like cruises?
I do.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm not crazy about when it gets super packed in on some cruises, so I kind of would prefer a cruise that's lower density than some of these, but it's still
How
largely
about one
fun.
Of those like more private ones where there's only like 60 people on board a smaller ship? Do you think you'd like that?
I think I could still have fun with that
because
I enjoy people.
Okay.
But I still think one of the things to me that is high novelty is one, there's the ability to move around.
Oh, so you like to be able to explore different areas?
The bigger boats have stuff to do, but it is, you know, I like stopping here and there. I go on vacations to get bored on purpose.
Oh.
Like, that's a little different. Some people go and they just want to go and go and go. Mm-hmm. I like doing some things, but I like having some downtime to just recharge.
That's fair.
So it makes it
easy. You're saying like lay by the pool, eat a lot of good food, and sit on the balcony and just breathe.
Those are okay with me. And then, you know, find a cool port, go out and do something fun. But it's the idea that I don't have to do a lot of logistical management.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of handled for a little while. That's nice.
That is nice, yeah.
So that part. Now, there and create circumstances where I'd rather do an Airbnb or a Vrbo, right? I'm not going to take a cruise to like hang out at the Oregon coast.
Yeah,
it's not going to work.
Like, no, it's like, got to be warm.
It's like, no, I want to be, you know, that I'll just go stay at a place on the coast and, you know, enjoy the beaches and, you know, what the local flavor has. But that's a different kind of vacation.
You're treading into the idea I had for a show today.
Oh boy.
Wow.
You know what?
Wasn't that a segue?
It is. Just roll with it.
No. So I was actually, you know, before we came in today, I was thinking about like, what are all the different things that we could talk about today? And one of the things that crossed my mind is like this difference between counting time and counting dollars, right? And like, I see a lot of people that are either like super reckless with their money or like super conservative with it and they don't ever have a good time. And kind of trying to figure out, like, if you could help people for a moment, how would you help them kind of walk the line between not being too reckless nor like too responsible? Like, do you have any like maybe tips or tricks for people on how to walk that line?
Yeah, I do. I think there's a frame up first and foremost. You know, the first frame up is understand, are you naturally nearsighted or farsighted?
So understand yourself is kind of trick number one.
Well, it's not just understand yourself. The reason I use this analogy is because people kind of remember, like, you know, if you put glasses on, like if you're nearsighted, then great. You know, you can pick something up and you can read it pretty easy. But when you look out on the horizon, it's not as clear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're farsighted, the stuff on the horizon is pretty clear. But when you look at stuff up pretty close, then it's harder to read. And so what do? We put on corrective lenses, whether it's contacts or glasses or whatever it needs to be, in order to fix the vision that you're not strong in naturally, okay? And finances are kind of like that. Some people, they're really good at, hey, I can be in this moment right now and I'll spend the money and it's fun, yay. But they just can't think about tomorrow or further down the road. And so those short-term decisions end up hampering their ability to be financially successful.
Mm-hmm.
But what a lot of folks miss, and I think you're kind of hinting at this, Matt, sometimes, is there are people that their natural financial focus is long-term. They're savers, and they look way down the road, but sometimes they look past today,
right,
even to the point of missing opportunities and sort of not being present. And the challenge is there's two different parts to it. This is the know yourself part, right? One of these is sort of driven by, let me seek pleasure right now, and I disregard the consequence. The other is I fear the consequences so much that I disregard the pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go, I don't know that either of those serves well. I think there is an appropriate balance. And through good financial planning, you can get closer to that balance. And I think it's also a work in progress. I don't think you hit the balance.
Right.
I think you are constantly managing that balance.
Yeah, and I think the question a lot of listeners would have would be, where is that balance? Like, how do I know that I am kind of balancing this teeter-totter between responsibility and recklessness, where I can say to myself, yes, now is an okay time to do blank. You know, whether it's go on a cruise or go rent out the VRBO. Like, when does the average person kind of give themselves the latitude to do something like that?
Well, I think that there are some general steps that one could take. I think Dave Ramsey's not far off, although he's really kind of heavy-handed.
He's kind of extreme, yeah.
Well, I think he has to be, because a lot of people that come to him have blown it, right?
It
and they're like, look, I have no discipline. I need a system that I can't screw up. And he's like, all right, do this.
He's got to make everything black and white. Otherwise, people will abuse the gray area.
Yes,
for sure.
And so, but for a lot of folks, that's, you know, you're not natively reckless, you're just looking for, you know, a way to make solid decisions. I think the first thing is you develop some adequate savings, and you make sure that the spending that is, so you have adequate savings for emergency reserves, right?
Sure.
And that's, you know, that sort of 3-month-ish income interruption, between 3 and 6 months, depending on how many income sources in your family and how many dependents you have on your income.
Yep.
So that 3 to 6 month range there. And then it is about, am I going to do something that stops me from saving for my long term? And if the answer is yes, then you need to weigh this carefully. But I think it's a non-negotiable. You don't get to go spend on the pleasure stuff if you haven't put your base in. So you just knuckle down and you put the safety base in. And then you get to the steady plot of long-term savings. And then you can look at spending on those other areas that are going to provide some, I'm going to call it emotional respite. I mean, that's what vacation is, right? Like, you're really, you need that break to sort of recharge and have some fun and meaning and purpose in your life. And you want those. And keep this in mind, too. The investments that you're making for your future, some of that investment may be in yourself. It may be in improving your ability to earn more, or that you're going to be buying things that will generate more revenue for you. So it may be entrepreneurial in nature, educational in nature. Mm-hmm. Nature. So those things are the backdrop that I would say. And this is kind of the framework for how I would look at it.
Yeah. And sometimes people even abuse that. I was talking to someone recently who's like, oh, I'm investing in myself, and I want to be a mechanic, and I went out and I bought like a $30,000 tool set, and I financed it for the next 10 years at this, you know, 7% interest rate. And I'm like, wait a minute. So, like, are you a good mechanic already? Like, do you already have the skill? No, but I'm going to learn it, I bet. And I'm like, whoa, like, you kind of jumped the gun here a little bit.
Let's just call that exactly what that is. That's justification and rationalization.
Mm-hmm. And I think people do that all the time.
Oh, that's just people that are dishonest with themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll just call you on it right there. If you're out there going, well, no, because it's like, look, if you put yourself into an adverse financial position and then explain why it's okay, then you're just in denial.
Well, I see it all the time, right? Like, people, even, you know, small business owners that, like, you think are doing pretty good, they'll go make some, like, crazy, you know, expense to the business, and then you're like, wait a minute, like, is that actually driving the revenue that can justify that purchase? And a lot of the times the answer is no.
Yeah.
And so, like, even the small business owners have to be careful of that too.
Yeah. Just so everybody knows, we literally have this conversation in our own office. Because for years, if everybody is unaware, we've moved our office location.
Yeah.
Right? And so we have a newer place. It's bigger, and it's actually larger than what we need. Now, the marketplace is unusual. in where we live, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just looking for what space is available and what matches the needs of our client base and our business and so forth.
Right.
So we did buy something that is big enough that we do have room to grow.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to walk in, you would say, you have excess capacity, or the building's bigger than we need. That's really true. And we talk about that behind the scenes, is are we just rationalizing this or not? And I hope the answer is no, we're not rationalizing this. Because one, we didn't buy something we couldn't afford. That was not the issue.
Yeah.
But two, the hope is that we can continue to grow and serve more people. And so that space will end up being filled as we grow our capacity and we continue to grow in the marketplace.
Yeah.
So that was the idea behind it, is that sometimes you do need the capacity to grow. But there's a difference between I'm buying something before I have the ability to pay for it versus I'm buying something while I have the ability to pay for it. Those are not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you know what? One of them, hey, I'm buying a $30,000 toolkit, and I'm really betting that it's going to work out.
Yep.
Right? That's not an investment at this point. Well, if you're not a mechanic yet, you haven't started or anything else, you're making a bet.
Yeah.
If it plays out, you can say, see how smart I was. Okay, great. And I hope that's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
But if it doesn't play out, will you also look at yourself and say, that was a gamble? It wasn't an investment.
Right. And there's differences in like what assets you're buying too, right? Like in the example you used, that's a real estate transaction, and real estate tends to be a pretty good store of value. Whereas like a tool set, that typically is a depreciating asset. And so it doesn't walk and talk the same way. Very, very different things.
It's true. Man, I'm looking at this clock. I cannot believe it. Apparently, we found something that we are interested in, because now the time is flying. We better grab our next break. So we'll do that. When we come back, we have got plenty more to discuss. But first, important messages from the people that want to hear. So stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240. Take you again.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Yeah.
So don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Good idea. All right. Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, guys. Reminder, you can grab the podcast. Here's the other thing. We record these things. It finds its way to YouTube. And if you want to hear what goes on off air, then you can actually hear that stuff. So we have all kinds of fun that we talk about. When we left at the break, though, we had just, now I'm trying to remember, what were we talking about?
We were talking about how we're going to get really, really good at this whole podcast thing, and then we're going to start selling seats so that people can watch us live, and then...
I don't recall this conversation at all.
Darn.
Well, apparently I don't understand enough of the last segment. We get to talk about other stuff in between. So, let's pick it up where we left off as best we can. So, I know we were talking about one of the things that we talked about during the break. We were talking a little bit about how much money do you need, or how do you know if you're in a spot where you can do things like take vacations and spend on entertainment. We kind of laid out the framework of you cover the base, and then you want to make sure that what you're doing is not going to rob from your ability to invest an appropriate amount for your future.
Right.
And all of a sudden, people will often look at that and go, well, dude, there's not enough margin left.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that is a genuine problem in this country right now. But I think this is where we've had this conversation before on the show, but I'm going to have it again real quick. You got to recognize the difference between wants and needs. And you have to know the difference between assets and liabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I can't tell you how many times people have said...
That was really what our break was talking about.
Yeah,
was the difference between
I needed to buy this stereo, and I needed to buy this other thing, and I needed to buy that thing. And you go, you didn't need to buy those things. You wanted to buy those things. Like, I needed to buy food. Right? I needed to make sure that I paid the rent. Okay? I agree. but I didn't need to take on a $2,000 a month car payment or whatever it might be, right? Mm-hmm. Even $1,000 a month car payments. I see these and I just think, okay, how much money do you have to earn to justify a $1,000 a month car payment? If a vehicle shouldn't be more than 20% of your income, then you need to be making about $75,000 a year at least when you start to consider taxes and so forth, at mm-hmm. least, in order for that to be even a consideration. And I'm pretty sure median income in the state of Oregon is below that. So the number of people that are out there finding themselves in $1,000 a month vehicle payment situations, I just scratch my head and think, you're confusing wants and needs right now.
Well, what's crazy is like when it's not just one of the people, like both the husband and the wife have the payment and they're sitting at, you know, $600 or $700 a month. And it's like, okay, so, you know, you're spending what, $1,300 a month in vehicle payments. It's like, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah. It's hard to like make any progress if you've strapped yourself to where everything's a payment, right? Like, oh, you got the house and you got the two vehicles and then you got the camp trailer and then you got the side-by-side. And it's like,
you started with this, Matt, the whole count your time, not your dollars thing. But mm-hmm. how many people just count how many dollars are going to flow through my life? And as long as my payments are less than my total cash flow, I'm good.
I know that like my generation, just talking to people, that's all it is. For most people, I'm not going to say everyone, but almost, you know, everyone I know, that's the game that they play. It's like, well, I want to have a really fun life right now. And so I'm just going to figure out what the total coming in is. And then I'm going to subtract out all the payments. And then we can add up to the amount that we make and let's go have fun.
So what makes me cringe about this is how little fear there is in that. I suppose I should admire the fearless nature of this to a certain extent, but boy, am I too paranoid for that.
Yeah,
my financial vision is naturally farther. I have to be kind of reminded to look at the short term.
Yeah,
I'm also, I will say probably, you know, unfortunately cheap to the point that I have to kind of not. I have to actively say, don't do that, right? Because we've talked about this on the show before, by the way, that Matt has a similar diagnosis where there's a certain sport in hunting for a great deal.
Yeah.
And that actually is kind of, it's the hunt itself is what's cool. Like the item is almost inconsequential because, you know, you oftentimes the hunt doesn't even save you money because the time you spent on the hunt wasn't worth it. But the hunt, there was an entertainment in the hunt and feeling like you got the deal.
Oh yeah. Everyone, well, not everyone. Some people just don't even look at the price and they're just like, I want it. I'm getting it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I do like a good deal.
We'll say I have adapted over time a little bit. My understanding of wealth and resources has matured. There was a season at which I kind of viewed everything like a taxi meter was running. And every mm-hmm. time I'd buy something, I did the time trade in my head of it's going to take me this many hours to trade for whatever I'm getting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty rational thing to do. And I think early on, it's a good thing to do to understand the value of money is if you can kind of run that equation in your head. But I will tell you that ultimately, that probably limits your ability to grow because it frames everything you're doing in terms of time trade for money as opposed to trading for the value trade for your mm-hmm. time.
Right.
And so you're missing part of that equation. Now, that also bugs me because when people say, well, it's value-based pricing, and I go, value to whom? Right? Because you're telling me it's this expensive, and I'm like, well, it's not valuable enough to me anymore. I won't buy it. So, that's the risk of somebody that sort of prices arrogantly and said, well, you know, if you can get the market to bear it, okay, but don't tell me it's valuable and nobody else agrees with you and you can't sell it and you're a victim.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, you're just bad at business.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what the market's willing to pay for it, and you're making it about you instead of the market. Market doesn't care about you. Market cares about the market, right?
Yeah.
The consumer cares about themselves. I buy this if I want it. If I don't want it, I don't buy it. Good talk.
That's a very different thing. Yeah.
So anyway, I like to share that whole mentality that comes with it. Now, I do think when we look at the trade concept, I think that's a really important core. Some people, they're trading time for money, they're trading value for money. But at the end of it, what if we could just take a step back and I could ask you this way? Hey, Matt, are you making a good trade?
That's really the question, right?
Yeah. I think that's really the question. And so maybe you don't have to spend so much time worrying about the meter in your head or what it is, but it's a, is this a good trade? If more people would ask themselves that question before they do that, it sort of changes the frame up. Because remember, when you trade, you get one thing, but you give something else up.
Right.
And that is, I think, the awareness level that folks have to get. So, well, I can do this short-term thing, but what am I going to trade away on the other side of that trade?
Sometimes it's okay to, like, trade your time for money, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because
absolutely.
Either you just don't have the time to do it yourself, or I think there's also, like, the stress relief, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to take it on, then you have to bear the stress of, like, dealing with it. Like, my dishwasher broke the other day, and I watched a video on how to repair it. And I'm like, could I do that? And I'm like, yeah, I probably could. And I'm like, but it also might not be that issue. It could have been the other issue that the person was talking about. I'm like, well, the parts alone now are like $500.
Because great, that's just buy a new dishwasher territory.
Right. And I'm like, and then, well, yeah. And so you start looking at, like, the cost of the dishwasher, and then you start looking at your time, and you're like, do I really want to spend a day of my time trying to monkey around with this thing and learn how to fix dishwashers? Or do I just want to call the guy and maybe he can fix it for $200 because he's got a shortcut?
Well, yeah, because they know what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, no, call the guy.
I think I have this sort of philosophy. It's really interesting. This one, I want you to remind me. We're going to grab our last break. It's a good time to grab the last break. But when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about, I guess, how, well, we're going to talk about how we frame this, how do we frame up the decision? Should I or shouldn't I?
You should.
Like build it or buy it, that, when we come back. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlechuck.
And Matt Dixon.
And we got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. Welcome back to the True Wealth Show home stretch, where I, you know, I realized I'd put on the headphones and I was trying to, like, go to the break. I could hear my own voice echoing my head. I'm like, I can't even talk right now. And you could totally hear it as I locked up at the last segment. So you should listen to the podcast if you want to hear me sound like I totally lost my mind. So here's where we're going to kind of head for this last segment. A lot of people, I want to share something. You know, philosophically, we are faith forward firm. Okay. So talking about, when do you do something or when do you hire it done by somebody else? So I want to point something out. I think we're all gifted in unique ways. Matt, you have a different skill set than I do. We have some overlap, but there are things that are different. It is not in my best interest to try to become the thing you're already great at if it sacrifices what I'm great at. Instead, what I want to do is partner with people that are great at other things and then share in the outcomes so that I can do the things I'm great at that serve other people, and the things that other people are great at can be used to serve me. And I think in that environment, what we do is we get a lot more efficient.
Right.
And I think that is a good starting point to understand, when do you start outsourcing things. But
what?
It's not something that you can just wave a wand and do. You need to put in place some guardrails and safety nets, because what some people will hear is, well, I'll just hire everybody else for these things. And before you know it, you can't afford to do that and you'll blow yourself up.
Yeah, and a lot of people do that. I think that's the story of America right now in general. America just outsources everything. They don't have any skills.
Yeah, let's just DoorDash everything.
I'll DoorDash everything. Oh, something broke. I'll call someone to fix it. Oh, you know, this car has this traded in. I'll just take on more debt and some more payments. Before you know it, like, oh, I can't build that piece of furniture. I'll just put it on Amazon's Klarna or whatever and pay $20 a month for the next 2 years. And by the time you're done, you've done nothing except assume a lot of debt, and now your life is miserable.
Yeah, and I still wonder, what were you doing to earn income to stack all that up in the first place?
Well,
so
yeah,
and you know, oftentimes somebody has a job, but you're right, it's this sort of this slow boil, right? You just get in the pot and you keep turning the temperature up with debt.
That's the killer.
It really is. So let me give you a few guidelines about
knowing when
you should do things.
Yeah, when to outsource.
Yeah. Now, these are not all from me, okay, but I'm going to share them. You know, some of these I've read and so forth, but I like them. I'm going to give some credit. If anybody wants to, I found a book called Buy Back Your Time. Author is Dan Martell. And I think there's some good stuff in there. I'm not going to say it's an automatic, and just because somebody writes it in a book doesn't make it instantly right. But I think there's a lot of credence to this. And he says, here's the formula for when you're going to outsource something. And before I share the formula, let me share something important. This is where the concept of investing back into yourself matters.
Mm-hmm.
Because simply hiring somebody else to create more time for you, okay. But is that time making you more valuable? Is your time becoming more valuable, and are you going to be able to be better compensated? Is your skill level going to rise up because of this? Because if you are on a fixed income and you start hiring other people to do things, you can run out of margin in your life. You'll run out of discretion. Yep. So what you're going to have to do is pick and choose what you're willing to outsource. You know, maybe it is fix the dishwasher, mm-hmm. because you just don't know how.
Right.
But maybe you can't outsource somebody mowing your lawn because you can't afford to do both. So you're going to have to mow the lawn.
Right.
So with that as the backdrop, what's the formula? Generally speaking,
okay,
if you can hire somebody else to do the work for 25% of what you earn or less. So if you make $50 an hour and you can get somebody to do something for $12.50 an hour, then that's a good thing to outsource. Now, if you're like a lot of people just went, well, wait a second, minimum wage is higher than that. Aha, it's going to be hard to outsource certain things, right? Maybe some babysitting gigs and stuff like that. Although I swear babysitters cost like way more than they should. I'm like, they're not, I don't get it. Another radio show. Not today. But that's the idea. If you make $100 an hour, you can pay somebody else $25 an hour to do something for you, right? Roughly one quarter of your wage. And what you should be doing then is buying back the time, so now you're not doing it, and that frees you up to take your $100 an hour time and focus it on more high-value tasks that generate revenue. And hopefully turn your $100 an hour time into $110 an hour time.
So to afford the repairman that comes to your house at $125 an hour, you'd have to be making $500 an hour.
In theory, yes.
So basically, that kind of makes sense, because that alludes to you better be able to fix all the things. Otherwise, you're
toast.
Or
you do the math of replacing them. Right? You do the math of replacing them, or you have to realize that I can't fix or replace this. I have to have somebody else do it. Therefore, I'm going to have to give up other discretionary things. It now becomes a trade in order to get that. So what we're doing is the necessary thing is going to rob from the unnecessary things.
Yeah, that's crazy to think about, because like almost anything now, you know, whether it's like you got a mechanic working on your car or a plumber coming out to your house, like $125 an hour is like kind of like a going rate for most like trades, right?
Yeah.
So for people that are able to outsource all the stuff, you basically have to make $500 an hour.
It's, and that therein lies the rub, is that it's very expensive to outsource all these things now.
Yeah.
And so what people I've observed is that people outsource in funny different ways. You know, Amazon Prime delivers, DoorDash delivers, right? You get all these other conveniences that show up to sort of buy back little bits and pieces of your time.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Yeah. But even now you're seeing with the increase in so many restaurants, especially fast food got so expensive that they kind of priced themselves out. And we'll see if that naturally corrects or not. But you're seeing a decline. A lot of people are just saying, you know what? I'll just cook at home. I can do a better job for cheaper. But what does that leave you with? Dishes and other stuff. So, you know, you are taking on that. It, you know, there's elements of work associated with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So those are the things that I think you need to consider. Is my time something that increases in value if I or not? You know, if you're working a $30 an hour job and you go, well, I'm going to hire somebody else for $30 an hour to do something. Because, okay, well, you're just trading time directly.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to make your $30 an hour position become more valuable so that you can earn more. That's how you can afford to outsource other things. I still think certain things are just worth it because it's not a direct time trade too, though. It's like you got to think, oh, well, it's 25% of my hourly wage, I should outsource it. But what if it would take you 10 hours to do something and it will take somebody else 1 hour to do it?
Yeah.
Okay. You do need to consider that too, is that I can't take an entire day. So it's still cheaper for me to hire this person than it is for me to take a day to try to do what they can do in an hour.
Hmm.
The dishwasher is kind of like that.
Yeah.
Right? It like maybe you can figure it out with a bunch of YouTube and a bunch of fiddling around, or somebody else could just come in and go, done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the decisions are, yeah, it's tricky, but I do think that if we're going to be fiscally sound, right, if we're going to be good stewards with our money, we got to think like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, not really a typical show from a financial advisor today. You know, we didn't talk a lot about the markets or traditional investments. We did talk about that attitude of money and how to, you know, be good stewards with it. I think that's still really relevant. Matt, how can people reach us if they want to talk about other aspects about their finances?
Sure. Yeah, you can either text us or call us at 541-375-0898. Or you can go to the website at littlejohnfs.com. You can shoot us an email. However you want to get a hold of us, just reach out to Little John Financial.
Okay. Well, there you go. You hear the music, so we're nearing the end of the show here. But I would encourage everybody, free to call and initial consults. We do not charge for it. We just want to make sure it's a good fit. So give us a shout, 541-375-0898. But we're out of time for now. So until next time, thanks for tuning in. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.